Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And our guest today is a talented actor who has made a name for himself, well, worldwide now, actually. First in Australia, his homeland, and now in the U.S. And his name is Ryan Kwanten. And we're very happy to have him.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you, Jesse. It's a pleasure to be here. Really, it is.
Where do you call home now? Or do you?
I sort of languish between Australia and the US, but I've been based in the US for 20 years. So the trips back to Australia are more trips as opposed to going back to live. As you see with this movie, I have been fortunate enough to be put in the position where I still can get back to my homeland and give back to the very community that started me.
Well, that's what's so funny is reading it. Normally, if you're in Australia, you're not getting to play Australian. Mm. And it made me laugh. I was looking through. I said, oh, they shot here. That's so it. Tell me he at least gets to be. Nope. Still okay. All right.
Yeah, there was something that was actually a discussion between the director and myself as to, you know, how much of the, since this is sort of one of the last remaining sort of cities in the fictitious world that we're creating, how much of a global take did he want in terms of accents? And he said, listen, I know you've got sort of a pretty impeccable American accent. Would you mind doing that? I said, no worries at all. And then as we're getting closer to the day, I'm hearing more and more Aussie accents than just my American accent. I said, did I be worried that this isn't global? I'm not going to stand out with it being like, no, believe me, when all is said and done, you're going to hear it all put together. Great. It's the beautiful thing about this business is the level of trust and vulnerability you have to have virtually every step of the way.
It's yeah. True.
And the movie we're talking about is 2067.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is, I don't know how to put it anymore. Being released, opening, dropping, being made available to people who would like to see it.
Doug Benson says it plopped.
This Friday.
Yeah. Yes. Doug Benson says that it plopped. It plopped on Wednesday. So your film plops on Friday.
Okay, and, great.
But and that it's such a different universe, of course, literally your film, but also the world. That in a way, smaller movies are getting a bigger shot than they might have otherwise because everybody is going, give me content, give me something to watch, and everyone's looking for escapism, which is exactly what this is.
Yeah, escapism, but I think, and I hope at the same time, it forces everyone to look a little bit deeper inside of themselves and then to ultimately have that ripple effect of realizing their place in the world. I think there has to be a deeper understanding of empathy. And that's sort of something we really tried to get across in this movie. Like take a walk in someone else's shoes for a little bit and perhaps feel their pain and realize that your level of selfishness, which we all tend to have as the human species, that we need to check that every now and then and really realize that there's a greater purpose to us being here. And Seth Lani, sort of our illustrious writer director, sort of tapped into this as much as 10 years ago. And so this has been his baby for the last sort of 10 years, really. And I've been involved for the last 2-3 to sort of help in financing. And these are issues both on a global and on a micro sort of standpoint that we both feel really strongly about.
Well, science fiction has always been a vehicle for conveying, you know, serious and provocative ideas in a palatable way for audiences, you know, where they don't feel like they've been given a dose of medicine. It's on one level, it's entertainment, and you can choose how deep you want to go.
No, it's wonderfully said, and I think that level of a heightened environment heightens the emotions, and so if you can get an audience to that state, it can have a very profound effect. And I think these days, a lot of the movies that we're calling sci-fi are turning into getting closer to the reality.
Yeah. I mean, even
yeah.
We were shooting this at the tail end of 2018, and we were wearing masks in the film, and you couldn't have, there wasn't a bet going around that we'd be wearing masks at the beginning of 2020, you know, and to sort of see iterations of what I was reading a couple of years ago now becoming a reality. It's a shock to the system, but it's also a call to art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My husband loves David Attenborough.
Oh, he doesn't.
Right. And we, who just got an Instagram, which I think is the most entertaining thing ever. But he just,
by the way, sorry, I'll continue. Yes, continue.
No, please, please.
Well, Anthony Hopkins also has an Instagram, and his is, but in that kind of caliber of iconic genius on Instagram, it doesn't really, okay, so please tell.
No, Anthony Hopkins is like the goofiest. It brings me so much joy. He's such a derp. And it's glorious. David Attenborough, who, of course, the thing is, because he always sounds, because of the accent and everything else, everything sounds that much more interesting. But as he sits you're burning things to the ground, he's doing it in such an articulate, lovely way, you think, yeah, I definitely am. I'm ruining everything. All right. Okay. But what he said was that now more than ever, we're realizing that we've overrun the world. And that as fancy as we think we are, at the end of the day, we need the things that the earth has. We cannot exist without them. Mm-hmm. So whether it's something like air or water or sunlight, we need all of these things. And if you don't realize that, then that's a more serious problem than anybody can help you with. And so every time we see films, and as you say, you're wrapping it. If you wrapped at the end of 2018, there are too many people don't understand how long films take from beginning to end and then reappearing. It's kind of mind blowing, but you know, things are getting worse. And so the more we can sort of have constructive conversations, not just you're bad, but how do you make it better? I think that's what everyone needs to be thinking about right now.
That's a lovely way to put it. Yeah, constructive conversations, the ability to be open-minded enough to know that there is another side, perhaps many different sides. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where we hope to sort of come from ultimately with this movie was, yeah, we have these two kind of protagonists, sort of brothers of sorts, taking us through this journey, two different sides of the same coin, searching for the same truth, but in ultimately very different ways, and realizing that one has to sacrifice. What are you willing to sacrifice, I guess, to sort of, to be better, to grow in this world, to evolve as opposed to devolve or just be complacent or you know, blindsided.
And you're from one of the most beautiful places in the world. And it's been hit by fire after fire and all sorts and watching the reef shift, but it's still so breathtakingly beautiful. So it doesn't surprise me at all that this is something near and dear to you. Mm. When you grow up with that kind of nature, Australia, it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. I can imagine that it would connect you in a very deep way.
Yeah, really well said. No, definitely. I consider myself an ambassador of nature for sure. I think most Australians do. Like, we're the world's biggest continent. 90% of our population lives on or near the coast. Mm-hmm. There's an enormous sense of boundlessness, of insignificance that we truly are in this grand scheme of things. So when our country's in flames, to see the way that not just that country, to be honest, like – we talk about sort of the disadvantages of technology, but the advantages is that you get empathy across the world. I know California sent some of its best firefighters out there to help it. So it was a real sort of international effort, and to sort of see the way that the world can come together at a really quick kind of time succession is pretty sort of inspiring to know when push comes to shove, we're pretty decent underneath all this. And, maybe that's what it takes. We just need sort of something to kind of fight against or fight with, and we will rally.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody wants to hug a koala and a kangaroo in their lifetime. Like, I'm pretty, wallabies too, don't mean to leave them out. But I think as soon as you see those poor little fellas, you're like, all right, I'm in it. Let's go. Get me on a plane.
Yeah, there was from that standpoint, there was an exhaustively long list of species that will no longer be, because of that fire.
We got to go several years ago. We got to go to Phillip Island.
Oh, I heard it's gorgeous. I haven't been there.
Oh, well, this is like Coles to Newcastle. But let us recommend that if you have an opportunity to go to Phillip Island, are the penguins?
Those freaking penguins. I can't.
Now, they originally were called fairy penguins.
Fairy penguins. They're 11 inches tall.
As the language evolves.
Ryan, they're my dream.
And as our culture evolves. They're now calling them
like blue penguin, whatever. They're fairy penguins, and they're the cutest thing you've ever seen in your life. Yeah. They're teeny tiny, and when they run, they go ee, and oh my god!
And every day at dusk, just as the sun is just hitting the horizon, they
come in
waddle
from the
out of the ocean, and come ashore, and go to a series of burrows that they have dug for themselves. And burrow in for the night, and I think they're monogamous too.
There's a whole. But you can watch them do this. They make you stay completely silent. There's no light, so you don't scare them.
Mm-hmm.
You're
very low. Watch light. Them. Very low light.
You watch them come in, and if you're me, you weep. And the thing is, now not all of them know where exactly they're going. So some of them wander into the parking lot, and people like me are like, "You want to get in my backpack? Oh, how convenient for both of us. Let's go home." And I had so many conversations with people saying, tell me people have taken them. Like, please tell me that at least one child like lived their dream and just went, yep, and took it home with them. I don't think anyone has, but I might become that guy.
Sounds like such an incredibly, sorry, Leonard, that's such an incredibly zen moment. Just, humans sitting there watching nature kind of evolve. Do they have migration cycles, or they live just on the island?
They live in my backpack. That's where they stay.
And forever in your mind.
Jesse's
not retreating from this.
No. Look, I have a bathtub full of fairy penguins. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
They do other stuff, but this tends to be their home base. This really is their home
base. And they're blue, right?
They're blue. They're blue.
And can you stay on the island?
Yes, because people live there. But it's very much a place of... This podcast brought to you by Visit Australia.
It's a beach community.
Yeah, it's really cute.
Vacation beach community.
Yeah.
And but boy, this is. But they do this like clockwork.
Yeah.
Every single evening, early evening. It's just astonishing.
Yeah, it's nice to see how nature responds when we're not sort of feeding it our our dirtiness. It'll be here long after we are, so we got to learn to live with it, not the other way around.
No question of that. And they're very, very careful, and they're conservationists there.
Yeah.
They treat this with the care that it warrants and deserves, so that we humans don't spoil it.
Yeah.
You saw those tiny gorgeous penguins, you wouldn't mess with it either. You would leave those angels alone.
Time to move on. Jess.
Sorry, okay, I'm sorry. I really love animals, but I also really love tiny animals. And I also really love penguins. Speaking of Australia.
We shouldn't, I don't know if I go so far. Yeah, actually, you know what? I find it hard to trust someone who doesn't like animals. There is that, I've got my little pooch sitting at my feet right now, and there's
I've got one right here. He's a sleeping. This is Hercules. Hercules is always with us when we record.
That's amazing.
He keeps us safe.
Some good mojo.
No, yeah. I do. I, if you don't like animals, I, with all due respect, probably don't like you.
Yeah, I find it hard to understand, you know, to get to the bottom of that one.
Yeah, dogs are, animals in general, best thing in the world. Yeah. So where did you grow up in Australia?
Kind of like a small little beach town, you know, a very insular type of place. And, you know, it was, it had its fair share of beauty, but it also had its darkness too. It's still to this day. And even when I was growing up, it had one of the highest youth suicide rates in the country. And it wasn't that it was a particularly underclass. It was somewhere between lower to middle class sort of neighborhood, but it was just the very insular way of living that I think a lot of, well, young males in particular, felt a little sort of disenfranchised. And so there was growing up in that kind of a landscape that sort of, I was out of home at a pretty early age and then sort of out in America by early 20s. And sort of flew the coop and sort of found myself out here. And I think I'm a better man from a distance than I, you know, and a better kind of son and brother. So, yeah, sometimes the distance does as well, I think.
Well, I mean, so rather than being sucked in by it, you recognize the need to leave.
Yeah, I'd seen too many friends go the other way. My mum, still to this day, works at Lifeline, which is an organisation, non-profit organisation that helps youth suicide or suicide in general. So they have helplines as well as sort of thrift stores. And my mum has managed one of their thrift stores for the last 20 years.
Thank you, Mama Quantin. That's a beautiful.
Yeah, thank you, Mama Quantin. Exactly.
But I read that you did get a degree in business in Sydney.
Yes, sir.
You weirdo, a real degree?
I know. It was one of those such a broad degree that, because, you know, who knows? Who really knows what they want to do? So that seemed like such a broad enough degree. I didn't have the marks to get into law, which I originally wanted to do, which I'm so glad I didn't. because the world needs another lawyer. But yeah, I don't think I would have found the craft of acting and the beautiful community around it had I not kind of followed sort of my instincts.
And what was your first move? Literally, what was your first move?
Into that world?
Yeah.
Well, both my brothers were at a school for the arts, and I was not, at least in my own head, creative in the slightest. I was very much sort of... you could find me in the water, any type of water sport, that's where I was. And so I went to school for that, for triathlon. And they both, one of them went for acting and another one went for music. As it turns out, the one that went to school for music is now an anesthesiologist. And I'm the one that went for music is a musician, and I am now a sportsman turned actor.
That's funny.
Yeah, and you know, it's sort of setting yourself up and not being afraid to kind of change. I think that's the lot we've been given in life. You can be content, or you can kind of continue to kind of try and evolve and see what else is out there, see what else is in there.
Yeah. Well, being on a show, for anyone who has done soap opera work, and we've spoken to so many, we've spoken to several other Aussies where, I mean, the joke is truly much like if you were in the United States as an actor and you weren't on ER at some point, do you even exist? If you're from Australia and you didn't do Neighbours or Home and Away, do you even exist? And the thing is, it's such a training ground and you have to learn really fast.
Right. No, you do. I mean, you definitely still exist if you don't come from either one of those two places, but it does seem from an outside eye that, a lot of talent, and it has, don't get me wrong, has come from
No, obviously people have many, many, many different paths, but it's always interesting because everybody has their own stories of having to learn dialogue that quickly. You know, you're given these pages and you have to just kind of figure it out. It's I think it's tougher than
in terms of film fitness, it definitely And preparedness, it definitely sort of bodes you well for any type of international kind of work. You know, I know that that type of work ethic that I had in Australia, which is, I mean, you don't even show up to an audition without knowing your lines, being half an hour early, all the kind of things that I would just take for granted. But you sort of immediately, I'd see guys when I first got out here 20 years ago still learning their lines in the waiting room. Like, for me, it was, I may not get another chance. So I'm going to put it all on the line right now. And if I don't get it, I can wipe my hands clean and know that I did everything I could. And everything beyond that was political, or I just wasn't right for it.
Right.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong; it would still hurt me whenever I wouldn't get anything
because you're human. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I can play anything. I'm right for everything. But you know, that's the nature of this beast is you've got to roll with the punches. You got to get yourself back up off the canvas every time you get told no, you weren't right for it. No, they went this way, they went that way. But it's that type of tenacity I think that can create good things.
Oh yeah.
Well, not just tenacity, but a work ethic, a solid work ethic, which you've just described. We had a longtime family friend who was an actor into his 90s. He lived well into his 90s, and the last few years, when he was slowing down, he wouldn't do auditions or readings for TV shows anymore, because by that time, you know, he was kind of like, if they don't know that they want me, you know, don't call me.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that he wouldn't do it anymore is that he put too much effort into the audition to at age 91 to go through that, because he didn't phone it in.
Yeah.
He didn't, you know, just brush up on his lines in the waiting room. And
I love that story. I love that. And they're the type of, you know, actors you end up sort of gravitating towards, the ones that are beyond my years. You know, I've been doing it close to 30 years now, but like the ones that are, like you said, still doing it well into, you know, their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, like they're and still finding this incredible lust for it. In fact, sometimes more so than the youngsters that have come in, maybe had one hit, and they think they kind of know it all, and you still see this level of exploration, of curiosity, of camaraderie that exists in these older actors, and you're like, that is someone I want to aspire to be like. If I'm still that enamored by the business at that age, I could only hope to be so lucky.
Yeah. You're in a little movie that I love, Griff the Invisible.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
it's one of those movies. I bring it up to people all the time. We love introducing people to hidden gems, stuff that they might have missed, and that is truly one of my favorites.
Thank you, Jess. Yeah, that was in all the characters I've played, that's probably one that's the closest to me, but probably most people would think it's the furthest from me. But there's a, you know, I'm probably at best an extroverted introvert. So there's a whole spectrum of weirdness that exists in there that I kind of love to exist in. And Griff tapped into all that level of weirdness, of escapism, of dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the art of using your imagination, I think, is something that it's almost like a lost art.
It is, and it's also,
and it gets weirdly bred, or not necessarily bred, but weirdly driven out of us as we get older. Mm-hmm. You know, the ability to be creative, which we all have. You know, to get out there, to climb a tree, to be a little bit ridiculous. You know, there's a whole host of things out there to entertain your inner weirdo.
Yes, or your inner child.
In a child, yes.
That too, both weirdo and child.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Whenever people would come to my house, they'd say, "You have so many stuffed animals." I'd say, "Those are my dad's." It was like, so being in this house, my dad, they do, both my parents really like stuffed animals. Specifically, you've got a lot of Mickeys.
Characters.
Yeah, characters. Not just teddy bears, though who doesn't love a good teddy? But they, you know, they're all characters from different things. But so I very much understand that. I love that
my house makes me smile, and that's what I think of, is both my parents are kind of kids in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps us young, keeps us silly.
Well, there's a big difference between childish and childlike.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I've still got my, you know, I haven't been living at home, obviously, for sort of 20 years, but my parents still in the same house. But I still have my good friends from Australia go over to their place and ask for advice, have a drink, sit down, you know, shoot the shit for a couple of hours and leave. And same with my other brothers. They still have their friends sort of come over, and mum and dad sort of very much part of their friend circle as we all are.
I love that.
That's as it should be, I think. Can you tell us any actors you've worked with that you've recognized that quality that you admire? You were just talking about a few minutes ago. Who has impressed you that you worked alongside?
It's a great question. You know, the first one that comes to mind, I did a movie last year called Loveland with a wonderful Indigenous Australian filmmaker who I've worked with before called Ivan Sen. And we worked together, and I had the distinct pleasure of working with, have you seen The Matrix?
Yeah.
The guy who plays the bad guy in that. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Talking about Hugo Weaving?
Yes. Yeah.
Who doesn't love Hugo Weaving? He's the best.
From a straight sort of character standpoint, he's second to none. But from a human, just exquisite. We touched on sort of having curiosity and lust for life. This is a man who, even on his day when he wasn't working, because it's such a low budget movie that we were shooting, even on the day he wasn't working, he came to work because we were traveling across. We were shooting in Hong Kong. We were traveling on a ferry across to a small little location where we were shooting. Hugo came to work still dressed up, just in case the director might have needed a shot from him. Sure enough, he did. They shot it. It's now in the movie, and it's a great part of the movie. But it's that type of commitment to the craft, to the people that you're surrounded with. It's like, wow, man, after everything you've done, after everything you've kind of given to this earth, to this craft, you can still check your ego at the door and just be there for us.
Mm.
And to see him on the ferry ride over, sharing stories, looking out in wonder at the world, it's very, like Leonard said, very childlike, you know? And
yeah.
I think that's what gives him the ability to transcend, but humanizes his characters at the same time, which is what we're all searching for in terms of actors.
Have you seen a film called Oranges and Sunshine?
I haven't.
Hugo Weaving gives such a beautiful performance in that. He plays, it's been too long.
Oranges, Sunshine?
Oranges and Sunshine.
And Sunshine, yeah.
I believe Emily Watson is the
one of the other greatest actresses of all time. Yeah.
But he'll break your heart. He'll break your heart in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to see it. What's the one with, it's just the two-hander. It's just him and Tony Martin in a room next to each other. I can't believe it. Some of the names on the tip of my tongue.
Okay. Hold please.
Jessie's flying fingers are on her
going.
iPhone device.
This is how we sit most of the time going, what was the name of the guy in the thing?
Right.
Do you remember when
The Interview. It was called The Interview.
The Interview. Okay.
Yeah, that would be my Hugo Weaving movie back to you guys.
Okay.
I like this game.
Fair enough.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Here it is. Interesting. Craig Monaghan. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Thank you.
Is there, besides Griff, which has a following, are there any other films on your resume that you felt proud of and that didn't find the audience you think they deserved?
Sure, there's a couple. Blunt Force Trauma, a movie by Ken Zanzel. I absolutely love that movie. And there's a a movie that's kind of like big enough with the fanboys called Knights of Bad Arstom.
Yep.
That was a bit more of a stoner type of movie. But yeah, they're two sort of forgotten ones that I would say. I don't want to, you know, you always hope for more audience, but it's interesting when these types of movies sort of stay in the zeitgeist to a certain extent or get recycled at a more appropriate time, perhaps. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, of course, literally movies never die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
In our world of streaming and access, a film, you know, can live forever. And
it's true of TV shows as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I have friends who, through this quarantine, have discovered True Blood for the first time. Mm-hmm. And that show was so, like, that was everywhere. You know, the massiveness of True Blood.
Talk about the zeitgeist.
The audience, holy hell. I mean, Die Hard. And even going to Comic-Con when True Blood existed, everything was bloody. You'd walk, you know, different hotel, you know, sometimes they'll take over the lobby or the elevators. Yeah. And it's like so you've got, you know, Anna Paquin's face just covered in blood, trying to go up to your room to take a nap.
It's the elevators, yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah, that was a bizarre experience going through the whole Comic-Con, because I think the first year we went there, we hadn't even premiered yet. But
sure.
The third season, we were getting police escorted everywhere because we needed to be sort of shuffled into places. Truly earth-shattering in terms of what it did for my career and just me as a person. I wholeheartedly thank Alan Ball, who took a gamble on me, and HBO took a huge gamble on me, and the fans, honestly, to stick around for 7 seasons.
Oh yeah.
That's like unheard of in this day and age. We're really part of a pretty kind of exclusive mob that can last 7 seasons, and it's only the fans that get you that far. Because if no one watched them, we wouldn't believe me. It was too much of an expensive show to not have a fan base.
Well, and I do feel like your character had one of the best arcs in the show, because you really. I imagine for an actor, sometimes it can be hard playing the same character long term, only because you want to explore different things. And that's why so many shows like Fargo or what have you, where there are season one-offs, you have so many actors who are now taking part because they know they don't necessarily have to commit longer term.
Absolutely.
But your character, Jason changed a lot. And I loved that, because it meant, in my mind, I'm production minded. It meant that I hoped you were having fun.
How could you not?
Yeah.
I mean, that took me to places inside of myself that I never even knew existed, you know, and there were at least a couple of moments virtually in every episode where I would sort of think, oh, wow, this is a hell of a read. Oh, wow, we're actually going to try and make this happen. And to be constantly surprised with that type of mentality and to be surrounded by the tip top of the industry, it was just a, and all these wonderful actors that came from various parts of the world and with different kind of attributes to sort of work together in such a cohesive and collaborative way. It was like nothing I'd really experienced before. An experience that you know, it still rings really, really true to me whenever we talk about it.
Well, when you read the first script that they gave you, mm-hmm. what did you make of it, and how much, if any, of that gigantic reaction did you anticipate?
You know the difference between good writing and great writing almost instantly. You mm-hmm. really do. There's a level of placing you in the story, right in the heart of it, that exists virtually straight away. And to sort of be swept into this heat, into the moss of Louisiana and all the sort of the bayous and the seedy kind of alleyways and the lusty characters, it really sort of evoked a feeling. I think that's what first took me, like, wow. And this is a feeling that sort of stayed with me so much so that, you know, I was willing to beg, borrow, steal, kill to get that job. Like, that was it was it. And at that point, it really was just a pilot. And so to see where it went, where Alan and his team of writers kind of took it, was pretty extraordinary.
It's also funny. We always talk about different actors being from different places, but also accents. So the idea that you've got Stephen Moyer, a Brit, Anna Paquin, a Kiwi, and you, an Aussie, placed into, as you say, the swamplands of Louisiana.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not movie magic.
No, but then we had sort of real guy. I mean, Sam Trammell's from Louisiana.
Oh, of course.
Nelson's from, you know, there's from the South too. So there was a real distinct, this beautiful hodgepodge of personalities, of philosophies on life that sort of came together for this show. It really was a right place, right time type of vibe, I think.
That's why it holds up, though. It's still, you know, it's still a lot of fun to watch. And that, you can't say that about everything. I wish you could.
Yeah, it's good to hear. It's good to hear.
Am I correct in assuming, and I'm maybe jumping at a conclusion here, that being in Louisiana, you ate well for 8 years?
Without saying, well, I'm going to sort of blow the facade, but we actually shot, I would say, a significant proportion, close to 90% here in Los Angeles.
Illusion shattered.
Yeah. It's amazing the amount of people who I've met from Louisiana that still swear blind that we shot it there, that are convinced that we shot it there. And there were certain segments, certain scenes that we did do there, but no, for the most part, we were all in Los Angeles. Add a bit of moss to the trees and some creative production design. And, you know, we had some very talented people. Suzuki on that, our production designer, was just incredible. Making any environment feel like a lived-in space, mm-hmm. and knowing where the spaces in that space were most lived in. You know, the dustiness and the rubbed offness of the linoleum on the floor next to the kitchen sink, that was, it was always more there in certain parts of the house. It was just, there was the least amount of acting to do because it was all there for you.
Yeah.
That's why we love production. That's why we love getting to speak to production designers and set decorators and designers, because it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And such an art form, and something that, you know, we know that for an actor, obviously your wardrobe is a piece of it, your setting is a piece of it. But as you say, when you get to walk in and that's there for you, you know, that's a gift. It's a really neat thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I love about this business. It's so many departments coming together for that small little moment on screen. Yep. And there's a romanticism to it. There's a tribalism to it. There's a, yeah, going back to this word, there's a weirdness to it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's this weird little guerrilla unit out there in the middle of bumfuck nowhere trying to make art, trying to make a difference, but it's what we do.
I cried a little the other day. I was driving, we're in LA too, and I was driving right near our house. You know, I'm born and raised here, so I'm used to seeing production everywhere. That's been part of my life, my whole life. And over the last few months, it stopped. And the other day I was driving down the street and there was a huge production set up at this jewelry store not far from us. And there was, I mean, everything. There was trucks in the back. And of course, everybody had on their PPE stuff and they were being safe. But I saw it and I started to cry. And I called my husband and I said, oh my God, I think, like, this is so silly, but it's really exciting to see a little bit of life coming back in that way. And I sat for a minute, I pulled over, I was totally a stalker. I pulled over and I just watched for a minute as they, you know, you had the team, you had a Video Village setting up, and Crafty was over in the corner getting everything out. And I watched some, very clearly, some brand new production assistants, like these kids had definitely, this was new, and they were trying to juggle coffee. And every bit of it just made me so happy.
Oh, yeah, and you sort of see in these times, these kind of harder than we imagined times, harder than we probably ever could have imagined times, you see the value of when people put their imagination together and create a series, a movie. You see people, you know, needing it now more than ever, that level of escapism, the level of perhaps even truth that they're not getting in their day-to-day life that they kind of seek and need in what they watch. And I think it's imperative now more than ever. So yeah, it's exciting to see productions slowly getting back into shooting. It really is. I'm off actually to Atlanta next week, so I'm excited to
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's really neat. I was going to make it. It's true. I was going to make a joke. My husband just worked on a Del Taco commercial, so all is well.
All is well. Now I know it's safe to go out there. Yeah.
All is well. But that's my gosh. So how long are you going to be in Atlanta for?
Just a week.
Okay. I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really exciting. Well, it makes me emotional. I love it. I love that life is happening again. This movie, you know, so you've been on sort of larger productions, smaller productions. You've been in something like True Blood, which is its own universe, and dealing with HBO. It's all these different places. Do you like to produce? Do you want to help? Because you were talking about with 2067 that you were able to sort of come in and help a bit with financing. And of course, anytime you can attach a name and you know your name has value, you can bring a lot.
Sure. Yeah, I've definitely dabbled in that world both here and in Australia. I was a producer on a series out here, which is another one I would sort of implore people to watch. I'm really proud of it. We did two seasons of it, a series called The Oath, which I produced with a bunch of other people. But yeah, it was nice. That was kind of my first foray in the US into that world. And it was really nice to be given a level of ownership, but B, the a little bit of rope from which to work with, from which to guide other actors and to kind of create a sentiment and a feeling on set that I'd always, you know, and we kind of touched on the kind of people that have inspired me in the past. And you learn from these people, you learn the type of environment that you want when you're working. And to get given that opportunity to create that environment or help create was amazing. So, definitely the world of producing is something that entices me more so than the world of directing. I think there's just too many talented, not that there aren't talented producers, but there's just too many talented directors out there. And I kind of like aligning my visions as an actor and potentially producer with someone else's visions. That's where I think the true collaboration of this business is when at its finest. You know?
Absolutely. And a real producer, not just someone who sort of gets to say producer, but the real ones who are on the ground and helping with those decisions and making things happen.
Hands on.
You know, it's night and day, and a good producer is worth their weight in gold.
Yeah, I think so. And look, more often than not, I see myself as that anyway, whether I get the title or not. I think it's,
of course, you know,
I pride myself on repeat business, on working with the same directors, the same sort of people over and over again, because A, it's one less thing for them and myself to worry about, but B, we know what we're getting in for. You know, we know that this person, there's a purity to that intention or to that vision. There's a connection and a care to the material and to the people making it. You can't ask for more than that.
Absolutely. No, there's a reason why there are teams. There's a reason why, you know, a director like Scorsese or someone else has the same editor, same producer, same this thing. Exactly.
Yeah, Eastwood's the same. You know, I think he's used the same crew for forever and a day. And apparently he makes every day and every movie's been on or under budget. I mean, it's...
And if it ain't broke, I mean, really.
So true. So true.
Don't mess with it. No, I love that. I love that. I love the idea of teamwork, and I love the idea of knowing someone well enough to have faith, but for you also to feel like you want to be as much a part as you can be to bring something to life. I think that is a real, that's what, as you say, you're almost 30 years, that's what that's brought you.
Yeah, I'm glad it's that and not sort of narcissism or cynicism. I'm sure you guys have sort of interviewed and met your fair share of the other sort of slice of life, but you know good people when you meet them. You know, we're better judges of character than we give ourselves credit for, I think.
Well, that's a compliment. I'll take it, and we'll pay you one back, which is yes, we sense that in you, that you know you've described your approach, your work ethic, and your background, and what brought you to this, and
you're a good egg, Ryan Quanten. You're a good egg.
Thank you.
You've earned success.
Yeah, but I pride myself on being that person, but exploring the darker side of humanity. Most of the characters I've chosen in the last sort of 10 years are very broken people. And I really enjoy adding just an ounce of humanity, an ounce of tenacity. I go back to that word. I feel like it's such a captivating trait, is sort of the tenacity, someone that against all odds, and perhaps even you know that they're not going to succeed, but yet there's an enormous amount of courage that's found in perhaps even more so of knowing that they're not going to succeed, yet still carrying on the task.
Everybody's got a story.
That's what makes great character portraits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, yeah, we spend our lives, though, that's what one thing I loved about this movie, we spend our lives sort of telling ourselves what we want to hear until the day that we can't afford to ignore it anymore. And I think that day that we accept that there are more important things than ourselves out in this world, like, is the day that we sort of begin to kind of grow. And for me, it's been the last, you know, since the beginning of this year, it's been a wonderful chance to get introspective and kind of try and find a deeper consciousness, I guess you could say. And I think for everyone, it's been a wonderful chance to kind of take stock, a force majeure of sorts, to really sort of what is it that makes that's more important to you. And it's more often than not, people's answers and their responses are not geared towards work. They're geared towards, you know, their fellow loved ones, the ones that we hold dearest and closest, that may not be getting the time or the attention that they deserve.
I've got two dogs. I've got my mom. I've got my dad. I've got my dog. My life is all right. You know?
Yeah,
that guy. it's as a family together, and I've spoken to several friends about this as well, we feel very lucky that we're all together. And if anything, over these last few months, we just know that we're grateful to have each other. My husband, who we jokingly call IT, because every time something crashes, my mom or my dad or me, Scott! So, you know, it's important to have a boy in the house who knows how to make things work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't know why this just came to mind. I was just sort of touching on courage before. There's, I made a point of when I first got out here to start reading a lot of the American literature that we don't sort of get sort of privy to in Australia. We obviously have our own set of curriculum that we need to learn. So one of the books that I picked up, and still one of my favorites, is To Kill a Mockingbird. And there's a great quote in there by Atticus that says, courage is when you know you're licked before you begin, but you begin anyway and you see it through no matter what. That's what I was trying to say about the earlier. You know, I think there's an element of that sense of hopeless courage that we have to kind of move forward with, both in this movie, 2067, and in our lives.
Absolutely.
Well, we have had such a good time talking to you, Ryan, and we wish you continued success. And we wish us all.
Yeah, we wish everybody continued success.
And as you say, people who are not beset by health issues right now are taking, the smart ones are taking this as a moment to contemplate. And that can lead to good things.
I think so, a
better way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much, guys, for this too. And may you both continue to fill your walls and your hearts Yeah, it's been a real treat. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So please take care and be well.
Today's episode of Malton on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.